It's a delicate one for Farage as well.
No, and it's difficult to see how this by-election will go. But the people I've spoken to are saying it is between Reform or Green, and that Labour could get squeezed out. But we'll see. We all know by-elections are very difficult things to predict. Well, it's going to be interesting times. All these papers are going to come out from the vetting process. Someone told me earlier, Steve Swinford was saying there may be even as many papers as there were in the latest dump of the Epstein files. So I guess that's going to settle the rest of February nights for us as we plough through them. I thank you both, Max Wilson and Rachel Cunliffe, for joining me this afternoon on Prospects for Starmer and the Labour Party. That's it for me today. Aisha Hazarika is in here from 1 o'clock tomorrow. My producer was Lizzie Highfield. James Heaton was pressing the buttons. On the Times at One next week, my old mate Jo Coburn. Jo Co, don't miss her. But right now, don't miss this either. It's Fee Glover. Jane Garvin, next on Times Radio.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Thank you, Andrew. 2 o'clock now. Good afternoon. It's Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio until four.
And in the next 2 hours, we'll talk about the Epstein files with a former US prosecutor and ask why it is that so few people have faced consequences for their association with the paedophile. New research is turning our understanding of autism in women upside down. We'll hear about that and talk to an actress diagnosed late in life. After 3:30 p.m, TV's Michaela Strachan will join us to tell us why she's taking to the stage with her new tour, Not Just a Wild Life. And why is Harry Potter's Draco Malfoy the symbol of Chinese New Year?
Here's the news at two from Stuart Willey.
Jane, thank you. Good afternoon. The Prime Minister has apologised to victims of Jeffrey Epstein for appointing Peter Mandelson as ambassador to Washington. Sir Keir Starmer says no one knew the depth and darkness of Mandelson's relationship with Epstein. As the Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, calls on Labour MPs to join a no-confidence vote on the Prime Minister, he told reporters he's carrying on.
I was elected in with this Labour government to bring about change for millions of people. That's what I intend to do. I regret making the decision to have appointed him in the first place. Had I known at the time what I know now or knew in September, I'd have never done it. And that's why today I've apologised for the fact that I appointed him in the first place and I believed his lies.
He said he understands the frustration of Labour colleagues as pressure mounts on his leadership. The government is being forced to hand over information about the appointment to a parliamentary committee after a revolt by senior backbenchers. The Times' political editor Stephen Swinford says tens of thousands of messages are likely to be included.
You've got this now unexploded bomb. I am told there is a unit in the Cabinet Office that is desperately trying to scope out the scale of this challenge. They are now legally bound to give everything that Mandelson did, except on some narrow national security grounds and international relations ground. So it will be a treasure trove of information, the most intimate communications from Lord Mandelson to everyone in government.
In other news, a former Conservative council leader in London has been chosen to head up Reform UK in Wales. Dan Thomas defected to Nigel Farage's party in June last year. He was born and grew up in the South Wales Valleys. A Russian cargo ship captain has been sentenced to 6 years in prison after the death of a crew member. Vladimir Motin was found guilty of gross negligence manslaughter over the collision with an oil tanker off the coast of Yorkshire last year. The judge called it an accident waiting to happen. Detective Chief Superintendent Craig Nicholson from Humberside Police spoke outside court.
Motin has shown no remorse at any stage of the investigation or the court proceedings. And even though he has now been sentenced and held accountable for his crimes, this will not bring Mark Pernia back. I sincerely hope today's outcome offers Mark's family some measure of solace, and my thoughts remain with them today.
36 cases of children suffering symptoms consistent with a toxin recently linked with baby formula are being investigated. The UK Health Security Agency says 24 cases were in England, 7 in Scotland, 3 in Wales and 1 in Northern Ireland. Certain batches of Nestle and Danone were recalled last month. South East Water has lifted its hosepipe ban in Kent and Sussex. It's been enforced since last July, affecting nearly 1.5 million customers. The announcement comes as the company's being investigated after repeated outages left homes without water for days. And the Bank of England has held interest rates at 3.75%, as forecasters had predicted. However, an unexpectedly close vote in the Monetary Policy Committee, 5-4, has raised expectations of future rate cuts. For a roundup of the news on demand, subscribe to the Times Radio News Briefing on any podcast platform.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the Times Radio app, online, and on your smart speaker.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wickes Kitchens and Bathrooms.
Good afternoon, Jane Garvey and Fee Glover, and you until 4 o'clock here on Times Radio. Welcome. The number is 0333 003 2353 if you want to make contact on WhatsApp. In a moment, we'll talk to US defence lawyer Cathy Fleming about why so many big names have just completely evaded justice in the Epstein scandal. We'll discuss the connection between the Chinese New Year and Draco Malfoy from Harry Potter. Jane Mulkerins, associate editor of the Times Mag, will talk about some of the, I was going to say, treats inside the magazine this weekend. What you will get is the inside track on that very interesting interview that Katie Balls did with Mandelson. That's just one of the things Jane will be talking about on the programme today. Why the victims of sodium valproate are still waiting for compensation. Sean Linton, the Sunday Times health editor, has been doggedly pursuing this story and he's back to update us this afternoon. The assumption that more men than women are autistic turns out to be completely wrong. We'll hear from Professor Gina Rippon, author of The Lost Girls of Autism. And a question you probably didn't expect to hear, why are some male skiers having to get their crotches microchipped? This is as we approach the Winter Olympic Games in Milan Cortina. Just sounds lovely, that, doesn't it? Milan Cortina.
It does. The former part of that story doesn't sound so great, Jane.
It doesn't, but I'm just trying to put a little bit of icing on the microchipped crotches cake. It's also Wick's Proud as a Peacock Thursday, which we both always look forward to, don't we?
We do.
What's that about?
So we love your entries. This is your opportunity to win a £250 Wick's voucher. You just have to tell us about a moment that made you proud as a peacock. It can be about yourself. It can be about somebody else. It does not have to be DIY related. Keep it brief, though. We're very busy.
We haven't got all day.
0333 003 2353 or Jane and Fee at times.radio.
And the prize is worth having. It's a £250 Wickes voucher.
It is. It's a lot of money in a Wickes store.
It really is. And our big guest is
Michaela Strachan. This has been a week of weeks in terms of the news. Pretty doom-laden, pretty dark, containing some very sinister themes. Michaela Strachan will brighten our 3.30 slot. She's going to talk about a new stage show that she's got, which is looking back over her career. I reckon that there isn't an interesting animal into whose eyes she hasn't gazed, and we need to hear her thoughts about that. She'll be here after 3.30.
Do you know what? It really will be good to hear.
Yeah, it'll be lovely.
Yeah, just something a bit different. The beauty of the natural world. Let's just embrace it, yeah. Please.
And it will make Monica very happy, yeah. Who says, please, not a further 2 hours listening to presenters hyperventilating on whether or not Sir Keir Starmer will resign. Well, that's not us, Monica. We're just not going to do that.
Although we should say, if he does resign between now and 4 o'clock, we will mention it.
Yep, and we will hyperventilate as well.
Now, we're going to have a look at the most read stories on the Times website this afternoon. And I just love the fact that the most read story is the most Times piece I can imagine. On you go, Fee.
Well, in at number three, just to keep you on your toes with anticipation, this is Australian boy. This is a very sad story. Only 4 years old, feared dead as police declare major crime. This is Gus Lamont, who went missing from his home, a sheep station in South Australia in September. Police say that somebody who lived there is a suspect in his disappearance. The second most read story is Starmer Mandelson latest. The Prime Minister apologises to Epstein's victims in speech. That story is being constantly updated on the Times website, so you can follow every single development there. But the most read piece on the Times website, the one that Jane was alluding to there, mother hits back at ex-newsreader who criticised Menace Child. Now, this is Alex Edwards, who said her family were unfairly targeted by Jan Leeming, and that is not a sentence I ever thought I'd read out loud, who complained online that her meal at a country house hotel was spoilt by a screaming child. You can read all of the articles on thetimes.com. You will need your digital subscription. If you don't have one, get one. You can go to thetimes.com/subscribe.
2:08. Now, Keir Starmer has apologised today to the victims of Jeffrey Epstein for appointing the paedophile's associate, Lord Mandelson, as the British ambassador to the States.
I am sorry. Sorry for what was done to you. Sorry that so many people with power failed you. Sorry for having believed Mandelson's lies and appointed him. And sorry that even now you're forced to watch this story unfold in public once again. But I also want to say this. In this country, we will not look away. We will not shrug our shoulders. And we will not allow the powerful to treat justice as optional. We will pursue the truth. We will uphold the integrity of public life. And we will do everything within our power and in the interests of justice to ensure accountability is delivered. That is what the public expects. That is what the victims deserve. And it is what I will do.
That's Sir Keir Starmer speaking today. I should say that the King and the Queen have been out and about. They have been to Essex today, and The Mirror, amongst other news organisations, reporting that a man in the crowd did shout, "Charles, Charles, have you pressurised the police to start investigating Andrew?" And police officers approached the man afterwards and walked with him away from the barriers, and apparently the King didn't say anything. But it's just not going away, and it's just, I know some listeners feel they've heard enough, but people keep telling us there's more to come and it's not going to get any better. Mandelson's downfall followed the release of Epstein's files by the US Department of Justice, which revealed the extent of the contact between the two men. Now, many of the files were not fully redacted, revealing the identities of victims as well as the powerful men who interacted with Epstein. Let's check in with Kathy Fleming, her defence lawyer and a former federal prosecutor based in New York. Kathy, good afternoon from us. First of all, let's just talk. Good afternoon. Let's just talk about the way this information and these images were released. It was really badly done, this, wasn't it? Because some of the people whose identities have been revealed hadn't even gone to the police. They'd never come forward.
It is. It's a shame. It's really quite awful. And I'm sympathetic to both sides. I'm more sympathetic, of course, to victims being revealed that shouldn't be. But the truth is, when you have millions of documents and you're redacting, mistakes are going to happen. Our courts have a pretty stringent system and the orders are in place to try to protect the victims, et cetera. And even when we do filings in court, we're required to redact personal information. Unfortunately, mistakes do happen.
Obviously, your legal system is very different from our own. You did say you had sympathy for other people involved in all this. Who did you mean?
Well, I was saying I was sympathetic to the prosecutors and the teams that are trying to meet the deadlines of getting the documents out timely and who are making mistakes, because it's awful. You feel terrible when that happens. I'm a little appalled. I'm a defense lawyer, and I'm a little appalled at the guilt by association. It's one thing if people actively participated in all this, but I see people resigning left and right that, as far as I know, had no involvement with any of the untoward and illegal activities that were going on. I think it's I'm trained to believe that you're innocent until you're proven guilty. And if there's something you did wrong, then you fess up to it, or you are found guilty of it. But the fact that you know somebody who knows somebody, or you hung out with a guy who presented to the world for a long time as a titan of power, I have some trouble with them.
Okay, well, that's really interesting. I mean, we asked you to come on the programme because we wanted to hear your perspective. But to many of us in this country, Cathy, it just feels that Britain, some notable individuals in Britain, though certainly probably not everybody British who is involved, has begun to pay a price for this horrible business. But in the States, absolutely nothing seems to have happened. So who are these people who've resigned who you feel sorry for?
Well, I don't think absolutely nothing has happened. First of all, Ghislaine Maxwell is spending 20 years in a federal prison.
Yes, she's British and a woman.
Well, but she lived in America a lot. I don't know who else they're going to prosecute or what the investigation's going to take. We have statutes of limitations, and I really can't talk about that. What I'm talking about are people who are now being revealed in emails. Only with business association. I'm in no way defending anyone who engaged in conduct with underage individuals. Make that clear. But we're seeing people resign here, too. There was a chairman of a law firm that just resigned because he apparently had a friendship or a relationship with this person. We saw presidents of universities resigning. If they were involved and they did things that were wrong, they should be accountable for it. But just guilt by association troubles me.
Do you think people do have a duty to speak up if they were on the so-called periphery of these events? If they heard something from somebody about something that had gone on or might have gone on, shouldn't they say something?
If you're asking me about moral duty, probably. If you're asking me about legal duty, no. They don't have a legal obligation to come forward and talk about what they saw unless they actually saw a crime that was committed and it's being investigated and they're asked about it. You know, we have congressional committees that are subpoenaing people, including Bill and Hillary Clinton, to find out what knowledge they have. The subpoena is a court order. You have to comply with that. But the idea that I met somebody 15 years ago or knew him 15 years ago and I did not know what was really going on, am I supposed to go forward to the police without being asked and say, well, let me tell you what I think happened?
Would you know,
I don't think that's right.
We've just been looking at images on our screens here of President Trump at a prayer breakfast. I mean, the concept is not really known in this country, but it's quite a relatively frequent event, isn't it, that the president speaks at these things?
Apparently.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not for 1 minute assuming that you're a supporter of Donald Trump, although, of course, you may be. It's a democracy. It's interesting, again, from our perspective, that America is, on one level, a deeply moral Christian country. And yet you've said yourself that although morally these men should have come forward, legally they have no requirement to do so. And you and many others would be perfectly happy to defend them in court.
Absolutely. I believe in the concept that innocence is until proven guilty. And I also believe that you're entitled to a good defense if you're in the crosshairs. That's because our Constitution guarantees it. And I believe in that. I don't think it's quite fair to say all Americans believe in this. Let me back up. I've said that badly. I do think we're a moral country. I don't think it's one standard of morality. I think people can be deeply moral and do what's right without attending prayer meetings. I think people who attend prayer meetings generally are moral people. There are exceptions to that. I think what's happening in Britain is also what has been happening here. People are appalled that this went on for so long. I think in the legal world, we were more appalled at what happened with regard to what apparently were deals behind the scenes way back when Jeffrey Epstein was first charged. I mean, that's the time that a fulsome investigation should have been done, and it wasn't. It's interesting, there was a big legal battle when he was charged later in the Southern District of New York. His defense counsel, appropriately but erroneously, argued that he was barred from being prosecuted based on the deal that had been done back in 2005, 2006. And the courts ruled against that. So I think that he was going to be held accountable. I think he was. It's astonishing to me the impact this man has had from beyond the grave. I mean, the all of these files coming out. And basically, I think most people have access to these files. You can go in and search them. The Department of Justice has the files online. And you can go on and search for whatever you're interested in. And I know we have journalists that are poring over
it. Oh, and they will be for many weeks to come, I'm quite sure.
Right. Doing a good job of it, doing a good job of analysing it.
Yeah. Do you think any of this is going to eventually end up at Donald Trump's door? He's mentioned any number of times in the most recent dump of the files.
I think it's been at his door, at least in the United States, for quite a while. Whether he is going to be harmed by it, I don't know. He doesn't seem to get harmed by much. And I have not heard of him being accused of wrongdoing. A friendship, I don't know how much he knew. I don't know if he'll be asked to testify. Candidly, I would hope they wait till his presidency's over, whether one supports him as a president or not. He is the president, and I'd like him to be dealing with more pertinent matters of state right now while he's president. But I would like to hear his thoughts at some point as to what he knew, when he knew it. He's denied a lot of the allegations that have come out about him. The card that supposedly he drew, he's denied it.
Well, he's suing, isn't he, on that one?
He is suing on it. That's a pretty good offense. If you are worried about what discovery is going to come out, our civil lawsuits bring out discovery left and right, tons of it. So if you're concerned about what's coming out, it's not a smart move to sue. But he's had good luck in the courts. So
yeah, but he's also an extremely wealthy man, and let's be honest, as president, he appears to be getting wealthier by the day, thanks to some of his activities and. Wealthy people, wealthy men in America, they do seem to be able to get away with it pretty much. Epstein certainly did, and many in his circle did.
There's no question that wealth in America evens up the odds a great deal. If you can afford to hire the best lawyers and hire the best resources, you have a much better shot of at least doing damage control or escaping liability altogether. There's no question.
So do you have any faith at all that those girls, young women, who were inadvertently identified in the files that were supposed to have been much more carefully redacted, will they ever get anything approaching justice?
I don't know how you get justice for being trafficked as a young girl. I don't know how you can possibly even that score ever. It's horrible. I would like to see compensation to them for what happened. It doesn't make up for what happened, but it's the only way we have in a civilized world to try to compensate people for horrible things. And I do know that his estate, which was sizable, I know that there's a victims fund that's there. So I would hope that even though they were inadvertently outed, I would hope that they are able to be compensated in some way and maybe get some solace in the fact that they're not alone and that anybody who's a thinking person, of course, sympathizes with anyone who was a victim of what went on there. It's horrific.
You're an incredibly experienced lawyer, Kathy. Are you shocked by the level of misogyny at the heart of all this?
I'm also somebody who came to age in the 70s. I'm never shocked by misogyny. I guess what I'm shocked at is that people are surprised that it went on for so long.
Right. That's a depressing note on which to end. But thank you very much indeed for your time, Kathy Fleming, an American defence lawyer and a former federal prosecutor in New York.
We'll get to your messages, many of them already coming into the programme. We'll do that in a couple of moments' time. It's 21 minutes past two. Coming up as well, why a certain Harry Potter character is the new face of Chinese New Year. You've got it all happening this afternoon. This is Jane and Fee on Times Radio with Wix. The kitchen and bathroom sale is now on. Explore all the sale offers at wix.co.uk or pop along to your local Wix store.
John Pienaar on Times Radio, telling the stories that matter.
You consider those attacks are justified, they're controversial, but you back those attacks.
Expert analysis and well-informed discussion.
Taking you inside America. I'm going to be talking to local reporters, journalists, dealing with the changes taking place across America.
And diverse opinion.
Personally, I find it hard to even say that out loud without laughing.
John Pienaar at Drive, this afternoon from 4 on Times Radio.
If you could sail anywhere in the world, where would you go? With Oceania Cruises, our small, luxurious ships allow us to dock in boutique ports in 600 stunning destinations. We offer a more immersive experience and a personalized service creating unique travel memories. From the Caribbean to the Mediterranean and the finest cuisine at sea, it can only be Oceania Cruises. Visit OceaniaCruises.com or your travel agent.
Discover the world of Dobble, back in McDonald's Happy Meal. Race through the worlds of music, sports, space, and more. How quickly can your little one spot the match? Dobble's bursting with fun. Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 5th of March 2026, from 11 a.m. Includes one pre-selected book or toy. Dobble range comprises toys only, while stocks last.
My dad is more than just a dad. My dad provides life-changing support to those affected by disaster and conflict, helping people in crisis, whoever and wherever they are. Through the gift that he left in his will to the British Red Cross, my dad still makes a difference to the world, even though he's no longer with us. You can make a difference too. Please go online and search Red Cross Wills and consider leaving a gift in your will to the British Red Cross.
Listen to Times Radio on your DAB digital radio.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix. The experts in bathrooms. From a shiny new tap to a full bathroom renovation, Wix has everything you need for every style of home. Browse thousands of bathroom products at wix.co.uk.
So many of you are proud as a peacock. This entry for the competition, £250 in Wix vouchers, comes in from Annie. My lovely husband, Brian, makes me feel proud as a peacock. We've been married for 35 years this year, an achievement in itself. We are not traditionally romantic, but his endless cups of tea make up for the lack of the odd bunch of flowers. A few years ago, illness came calling at his door, but he's recovered so well and thrown himself into early retirement. I decided to join him and we potter and enjoy several activities. He's a superstar and the heart of our family. We don't tell him that we appreciate him enough, but we do. You're in the pot, Annie.
Very, very nice. This is from Sarah. I'd like to nominate my husband, David, for repairing the major leak in our bathroom WC. I should add, this was not a mere dribble, but torrents of water. Thankfully, she says, just clean water, flooding onto the bathroom floor. When he disconnected the toilet... Oh, dear, I'm afraid...
Is it detail we don't need?
Well, we're trying to sort of cheer people up a little bit. When he disconnected the toilet, it was then shockingly evident that the soil pipe had been eaten away by rats. No doubt about it, due to the large amount of rat poo in the area, plus the huge holes in the pipe. We had heard banging and scratching coming from the wall in our living room for the last month, so that was obviously the ratty friends scaling the vertical soil pipe. When my husband investigated this on the internet, it is apparently a common problem. So, as they say, you're only a metre away from a rat. Well, that was the case as I sat happily on the sofa enjoying Traitors. Sarah and husband David, what can we say? Thank you for the entry.
I'm glad you got that off your chest, but I'm not sure I want it on mine. More of those will be lovely this afternoon. 0333 003 2353 or janeandfee@times.radio. We'll announce the winner just before 4 o'clock. Well, Chinese New Year is fast approaching, and if you're given to watching the world through social media, it would seem it's the year of Draco Malfoy. The Harry Potter character has become an unlikely mascot for the celebration in China, thanks to the translation of Malfoy being similar to the Mandarin word for horse. And in the Chinese calendar, it is about to be the year of the horse. Let's talk more with Cindy Yu, Times columnist. Hello, Cindy.
Hello.
Tell us a little bit more about what Year of the Horse might bring to the world. I'm always fascinated by the characteristics attributed to the Chinese year that you were born in.
Yeah, it's always a little bit vibes-based, but always positive as well. So it's what you might expect from the Year of the Horse. You know, you might have galloping success, or might be striding forward, you might be racing, you know, all of these kind of adjectives, which, of course, in Chinese horses also have. But nobody ever wants to be gloomy about this. Even if you're a Year of the Rat, they will give you some kind of good attribution there, like wittiness or cleverness or something like that.
Yeah, so not like the rats we were previously talking about. We'll find a good side to a rat for Year of the Rat. And can you just tell us what the word is in Mandarin that sounds a bit like Malfoy?
So the word for horse in Mandarin is Ma, and Malfoy's transliteration into Chinese is Mao Fu. So literally it is the same character. His name is three characters. The first one is the character of a horse, just because it sounds like that. And clearly someone this year suddenly realised, oh my God, we can make a pun on this. So his face has been plastered onto these kind of traditional Chinese decorations for Chinese New Year. Because actually the third character in his Chinese name, Fu, is also the word for luck or auspiciousness. So that's what, you know, you want to have in your Chinese New Year decorations anyway. So someone just joined the two and you've got this kind of Photoshop picture of Tom Felton's face, 12-year-old face on these decorations all over China.
So I can see the logic in it, but it's just still a bit bizarre, Cindy, isn't it?
Well, I was reflecting on this when I saw this story, and actually so much of Chinese humour is pun-based. People sometimes ask me, you know, what do Chinese people find funny? But because the language is so interesting in certain ways, so it's, there are limited number of syllables, but the written characters are so many, so many more, which means that actually when you say a particular sound, it can mean so many different characters unless you've got it written down. And that opens up so many opportunities for puns and wordplay. And so that's always been the case through millennia of Chinese culture. Now it's just a very kind of millennial way of doing it because it's Harry Potter. But in some ways, it's a very traditional form of Chinese humour.
Right. And is Harry Potter big enough in China for this to be instantly recognisable?
Yeah, it really is. Not all Western franchises make it into China, but Harry Potter certainly was one. Older millennials in China, similarly to the rest of the world, would have grown up with a franchise, with the books that were translated into Chinese, the films had dubbed Chinese versions. I've got a vivid memory of watching The Chamber of Secrets as a very young child in the cinema, and then when the spiders came out, I had to run out and my dad followed me after. So, you know, it's a real global franchise in that sense, and the Chinese do love it as well. Obviously, this is a bit retro because, you know, this is from 20 years ago, if not longer, of Draco Malfoy as a young child. But for those people who are now in their 30s and 40s, it is instantly recognisable. Yeah.
Does anybody know how Tom Felton is coping with all of this?
Apparently he's shared it on his Instagram or on his social media in general, which has also been picked up by Chinese social media, which is very kind of flattered and saying like, oh, Tom Felton's got a great sense of humour. Like he also finds this funny. So it's like a nice bit of interactive, you know, breaking down that great firewalk.
Yes. Firewalk. Yeah. Well, I mean, he must be absolutely thrilled because there's no kind of dark side to this at all. As you say, it's just funny. It's a celebration. Why not?
Yeah, it's just extraordinarily silly. It is really, really, really silly. And that's actually a lot of what Chinese humour is based on as well. Mm.
Do you feel that the Year of the Horse is going to be an auspicious year for the world, Cindy?
It's not looking good so far, is it?
No, not really. <we're> sadly.
Well, it technically, it comes in February 17th. Okay. So maybe this is the last bit of this year, which zodiac is it this year? I can't remember. Is it the snake this year, maybe? But and then maybe come February 17th, everything's going to turn around as well. But actually, the other thing that's funny that's happened to the Year of the Horse is that this toy manufacturer sewed this horse plushie, the mouth of the horse plushie, upside down to make a sad-looking horse plushie rather than like a smiling horse plushie. And that tragically comic but cute horse has also gone viral because it's kind of really tapping into people feeling, oh, I'm just cute but sad, you know, this kind of millennial angst feeling as well. So, yeah, it's all happening.
Okay, we don't want a sad horse. We want a happy horse. Cindy, it's always lovely to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed for explaining that story to us. That's Cindy Yu. So the Year of the Horse, it does start on February the 17th. And let's hope it's good times ahead.
You can hope, certainly.
Let's cling to something, Jane.
I think I'm thinking more of a sort of rather tired old donkey on Blackpool Sands. That's what I'm thinking of. Anyway, will the latest development in the sodium valproate scandal see victims finally get compensation? That is next here on Times Radio, just after 2:30. Here are the headlines. Stuart Willie.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio.
Jane, thank you. Good afternoon. The Conservative leader is urging Labour MPs to join a vote of no confidence in Sir Keir Starmer. It follows the Prime Minister's apology to victims of Jeffrey Epstein for appointing his friend Peter Mandelson as ambassador to the US. Pressure's mounting on Starmer amid what some are calling the biggest political scandal in decades. Ian Byrne is a backbench Labour MP.
You know, he's fighting for his political life at the moment. It's really sad that we're here today talking about this decision with Mandelson because it was completely unneeded. he should never have been appointed. Lots of people in politics have known him a long time. He's got a long checkered history. His personality traits are well known.
Ukraine's president says more than 50,000 of his soldiers have been killed since Russia's invasion in 2022. The rare admission by Volodymyr Zelensky comes after 2 days of talks with Moscow and Washington in Abu Dhabi. Afterward, the US envoy Steve Witkoff said significant work remains. A judge has told the captain of a Russian ship he was an accident waiting to happen and jailed him for 6 years. Vladimir Motin crashed into an oil tanker off the Yorkshire coast in March last year, killing a crew member. The number of people in England's hospitals with flu has fallen by a quarter in a week. NHS bosses say winter planning is paying off. Cases of norovirus have also dropped. And for a news bulletin when you want it, search for the Times Radio News Briefing on the Times Radio app.
This is Times Radio.
I thought I'd seen it all, then felt myself awaken. I thought I'd witnessed beauty before my breath was taken. I thought that I'd known wonder, then sailed beneath these skies. I thought I'd seen the world until I opened my eyes. Change the way you see the world with HX Expeditions. Search Travel HX to discover more.
When you leave a gift in your will to guide dogs, where could it lead? It might lead to a mum and dad feeling hopeful about their child's future.
When we were told originally that Mabel was blind, I kind of envisioned that she wouldn't be able to do anything as she grew up.
I feel good about Mabel's future now. There's no limit on what she can do.
Your gift to guide dogs could lead to a future where lives are transformed. Find out how to make your life-changing will for free. Search Guide Dogs Free Wills.
Guide Dogs. Wake up to a brighter breakfast with Chloe Tilley and Callum McDonald tomorrow morning from 6 on Times Radio.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix Kitchens and Bathrooms. Wix local design experts are ready to help. Whether you start with an in-store design consultation or with a free home measure, it's completely up to you. Find out more about the free design service at wix.co.uk.
John Pienaar takes over from us at 4 o'clock. Hello, John.
Hi there. So, I mean, you can guess what am I going to be talking about a lot. You know the answer. Won't even ask you to answer the question. So it's Keir Starmer. We heard him say sorry this morning for the first time for taking the decisions that he took to put Mandelson into the embassy in Washington. It's a bit late, wasn't it? And is it going to do him much good? I seriously doubt that. I'm going to be talking to Labour MPs because it's got beyond that, hasn't it? But I'll do that. I'll be talking to the Treasury Minister, Dan Tomlinson, too. And just seeing the news that the Tory party leader, Kemi Badenoch, is calling a vote of confidence in the government, which is, you know, the one thing likely to unite Labour MPs. The whips have got something to say to them now. Do you really want to join the other side against your own? And it will reduce the number. Although it will also allow Kemi Badenoch, when she loses that vote, to say, look, they're all sticking together when the time comes. But still, we can talk about that too. Also going to be talking to a former senior commander at Scotland Yard about the fact that the officers there are not allowing Keir Starmer to publish all the documents into the appointment of Mandelson. I still don't know why. I still cannot imagine what might come out of documents that could change the judgment on whether or not Peter Mandelson committed misconduct in public office. And so I'll ask Stephen Roberts about that. Also, this question, really fascinating, interesting question. Was Jeffrey Epstein a KGB Russian asset? So the Polish government are looking into that with their own inquiry. And Pauline Neville Jones is coming on the show. She was a chair of the Joint Intelligence Committee. What does she think about all of that? And does she share concern that by leaking in the way that he was Peter Mandelson, however inadvertently, was he providing information that might have been passed on to the KGB too? I'll be asking the Russian former Prime Minister about that, and there'll be plenty else too.
Your producer, well, your editor Sandra is waiting outside for you. You're meant to be in a pre-record. John. Go, John. Oh, go.
Honestly.
The jeopardy of live radio.
I would not cross her.
Well, that's why I've given her a name check. I'm absolutely terrified of her. Sorry, Sandra. right, it's... Well, she is, that's all we both are. It's 2:37, and yes, you sit down wherever you like, Sean. Welcome to Times Radio. If you've just tuned in, we're glad to have you. It's Jane Garvey and Fee Glover here until 4 o'clock. Now, this is a story we have covered before. We'll cover it again. It's the sodium valproate scandal. in which thousands of women were prescribed medication without being warned that it could cause serious birth defects in their children. And it's due now to be taken right to the Prime Minister's door. Keir Starmer is going to be lobbied directly to agree to compensate the victims of one of Britain's greatest drug scandals after 18 months of ministers dragging their feet on this. Let's hear from Branwen Mann. I'm sorry, Branwen Mann was actually born with birth defects after her mother, Deborah, was given that drug, sodium valproate, during her pregnancy. And this is Deborah telling us why she's sceptical that anything is going to change.
I don't expect financial redress to happen because I don't think the government can afford to pay us. I don't even think the non-financial redress will be any good. Why? Because, well, simply because those who have been affected by sodium valproate don't have a strong enough voice. No one wants to hear our story because no one wants to even dare imagine the harm this drug has caused. And no one even wants to understand. And because of this, I don't think any form of redress will be effective.
And that was actually the voice of Branwen Mann. That was my error, so I apologise for that. Sean Linton is health editor of the Sunday Times. So Branwen's lack of hope, I mean, it probably does reflect how so many of the victims of this scandal are going to be feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I've been covering this now since 2022 when the Sunday Times did a big investigation into this to kind of re-underline this scandal, which we've known about for years now, but we've kind of pushed it in. The Sunday Times has officially backed these families in getting redress. And I think what's really difficult when you speak to these families, you get a real sense of the dismay and the despair that they're waiting and waiting and waiting and receiving what reads like and sounds like and feels like very much boilerplate standard responses. And so, you know, this interesting story that we did on Sunday with the Patient Safety Commissioner for England, Henrietta Hughes, she's used new legal powers that she has to kind of force the Department for Health to reveal what they've actually been doing inside and to try and effectively get them to say something else new. And it, what's interesting is they do reveal that the government are having meetings about this. They are discussing financial redress. In fact, I think for the first time, the government have said it is actively being considered. So that's positive. That gives a bit of hope. But what we aren't seeing is any timetable, any real commitment. And of course, it's out of the Department for Health's hands. It goes higher to the Treasury and Number 10, which is, as you say, where the pressure will go next from the Patient Safety Commissioner. She's looking to try and force Number 10 to reveal what its thinking is about this. But so it's positive, one step forward, but you know it's a long road ahead, I think. And I think the government need to realise there are so many families and so many parents and children who are, you know, parents who are getting older.
Yeah.
And these children, you know, don't have at the moment anyone to look after them if their parents aren't around. And that will come to pass. So it's really a case of the state pays now and puts plans in place and care plans in place, or it pays a lot more later on when it could be a lot worse for these children.
Yes, I mean, it's really important, isn't it? Although there's lots of emotion, of course, we do have to look at the cold economic facts. And as you say, it would be better for taxpayers if this was sorted out sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there are a lot of different campaigns demanding the taxpayer payout and compensation for things. I think it's important people remember what we're talking about here. A state failure where regulators caused these disabilities to these children, a lifelong disability, things they'll never recover from, physical, mental, they need long-term care. It was done to them. It wasn't the parents' fault. It wasn't the children's fault.
Just remind us how many people might be affected here.
Well, the estimates vary, but there are estimates of up to 20,000 people may have been affected in some way by sodium valproate. How many actually need compensation could be actually a lot less than that, but we just don't know. But part of the recommended plans from Henrietta Hughes, the Patient Safety Commissioner, was to sort of have a kind of gateway process, an interim payment. And actually what a lot of families are looking for is a kind of long-term commitment and payouts. So we're not talking about writing a cheque for, you know, millions and millions of pounds to every family. It could be in the form of more longer-term payouts. And I think, you know, this this is a one-off cost, if you like, and it's a sense of responsibility on the government to do the right thing. I don't think this is a case like with other issues affecting public services where it's an open-ended ask. It isn't. And I think ministers really need to think quite hard about whether they can actually turn away from these families.
You mentioned the regulator a while ago. Why was this drug prescribed? Because I understand that there were always there were questions about it, weren't there?
Yeah, absolutely. So at the very point that sodium valproate was licensed for use in the UK in the early 1970s, the drug company behind it, Sanofi, warned the UK regulators at the time that there were potential signs, potential risks that this drug could be teratogenic. And what that means is it attacks the unborn baby inside the mother. So a lot of women took this drug for epilepsy. It's a very effective drug for epilepsy. Yeah. But what happened was that the regulators at the time decided not to warn women because they didn't want to cause what they described as undue concern by the women, so that it was hidden from the women.
Effectively, they were infantilised by the state, weren't they?
Exactly right, exactly right. You know, this goes back to maybe a bit more of a patriarchal medicine era, but the fact remains that decision was taken. Parents weren't told, and in fact, that's carried on for many, many years. I have spoken with women who, you know, even in the 90s and as early as 2000s, were told this drug was safe when it medically is known that it's not. And as the research developed through the 70s and 80s, actually the drug company Sanofi did come forward to the regulators and say, actually, we think there are some more problems with this drug. There are more problems. And they asked for things to be done, to be changed in terms of the information patients were given. And they were told no. So this is not on the drug company. This is on the UK state, the organs of the state that failed to look after these women and their babies. And, you know, I think, the Sunday Times is quite clear. We think the responsibility is on the government to make sure these children have the care they need.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose we should be clear about this. It's not the current government, is it? It's any number of other governments.
Indeed. And, you know, we have seen governments come and go. In fact, the Tory administration had said point blank in 2021 that they would not consider financial redress. It was a no. And that position changed after the Sunday Times expose. So I'm pleased that we've been able to deliver that for families. But I'm afraid that the clock is ticking and they're being made to wait longer and longer and longer. And if you go and meet some of these families, if you see the way the entire family, not just the child, but the parents and their siblings, their whole life is changed because they have to look after someone who's severely disabled. You know, they've had their life stolen from them, but so have their siblings and parents as well, and they're surviving on benefits and unable to work, etc. And it's really quite grim, and we have done this to them.
Yeah, and we should also, I suppose, acknowledge that this isn't just a Britain problem, is it? This drug presumably was given to women with epilepsy all over the world?
Well, that's the interesting thing. So in France, there is a compensation scheme. In other countries, in New Zealand, I think there's a compensation scheme as well. So families around the world are getting help from the state. And I think, you know, it is to our shame, actually, that we are behind those countries and we haven't delivered on that yet. And we will be pushing the government on this, both as a newspaper, and I'm sure the families will continue to campaign as well. I think we've had over 100 parliamentary questions in the House of Commons on this. So the MPs from across all sides of the House back these families. Mm. We just need the government to take the action.
I was just going to ask you, Sean, why are we so bad at things like this? You look at infected blood as well. We don't come out of that well.
No, it's a bigger question that I've thought about, actually, in my role as health editor. And you do see it with repeated scandals, you know, and I have to say, particularly in women's issues. So, you know, think about the maternity scandals that we've seen in the last few years, which I've covered as well. There's something about the British state and the sort of status quo that those in authority want to maintain. They don't necessarily willingly listen to people raising concerns and issues, and it sometimes takes, you know, a real scandal, a real awful situation to develop. Sometimes it takes media scrutiny and exposés to kind of force this stuff out into the light. I think one of the lessons for the British state from the infected blood scandal, the maternity scandals, sodium valproate, and there are many others as well, we've got to start listening to people and acting on concerns. I think we've got a sort of cultural problem here where a lot of things might go into the too difficult pile. And that's a failure of state in itself. You know, if we're not able to pick up these problems, we must be able to react and sort things out faster. And unfortunately, we keep seeing repeated examples of this.
It's very, very poor.
Yeah, Sean, thank you. You've been, well, I think you've been dogged on this one.
My pleasure.
And you're not going to give up. Thank you very much. That's Sean Linton at the Sunday Times health editor on the sodium valproate scandal, which actually everyone should know about, but still, despite your best efforts, a lot of people either don't know or choose not to know about it. But anyway, well done you. Thank you.
Thank you.
We've got some lovely entries so far today on the Proud as a Peacock Award. Your chance to win £250 in vouchers. This comes in from Paul, who says, I'd like to nominate my daughter Alexandra, who was 17 yesterday, passed her driving theory test that evening. COVID and cancer conspired to take her wonderful mum away from us in 2020. Since then, she's grown into a confident, intelligent, beautiful young woman, despite a sometimes hapless father being allegedly in charge. She wants to refurbish a static caravan we used while renovating our house. This would be for her to hang out with her friends in, and she wants to have a go at holiday letting. It'd be nice to encourage her entrepreneurship. Her mum would be so proud, as am I. And Paul ends by saying, I'm the same generation as yourselves and I love the humour. It's quite specific, isn't it? It started in the 60s.
It's a kind of desperation, really, isn't it, Paul?
It is. It is very much that type of humour. Paul, you definitely go into the pot. We'll get a sneak peek into this weekend's edition of the Times magazine with its associate editor, Jane Mulcairns. She's got some news of her own. It is 12 minutes to three. Jane and Fee on Times Radio with Wickes, the experts in kitchens and bathrooms.
Alexis Conran on Times Radio with Wild Frontiers Travel. Go beyond the headlines and explore the human experiences at the heart of the week's news agenda with well-informed debate and thoughtful insight, tailor-made for anyone looking to broaden their horizons, not follow the herd.
Plus, get my expertly curated guide to the best the weekend has to offer, whether you're staying in or looking for adventure.
This Saturday afternoon from 1 on Times Radio with Wild Frontiers. Never stop seeking with Wild Frontiers Travel.
Download the free Times Radio app and listen to us wherever you are.
When you switch the family's unlimited plans to Vodafone, you save. So while Nan's learning to voice note,
can you hear this? Is this on?
You're saving. While your daughter's setting a new high score on her favourite game.
Get in!
You're saving. While your son's video calling his crush for 3 hours.
I love you more.
You're saving. Save more when you switch your family's plans to Vodafone. With Vodafone together. Eligible plans from the 30th of October. Credit check and terms apply.
Romantic retreats. Luxury beachfront hotels. Expansive family villas with sensational sea views. Not lots of. Just the very best of. Simpson Travel. The magical destinations you love. The personal service you expect. We visit every one of our properties so we can handpick the perfect holiday for you. SimpsonTravel.com, because your time is precious.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the free Times Radio app, and on your smart speaker, Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
And the other Janes in the studio with us now, 10 minutes to three. How are you, lady?
Very well, thank
you. What are you doing, Garvey?
Garvey's cleaning things.
Okay, she's having a little bit of a root around.
she's got a couple of minutes to spare while we chat, so she thought she'd do a bit of hoovering.
It was the opposite of slick. Yeah. I do apologise.
Do you know what, if you leave her alone for too long, she just goes domestic.
She'll put the bins out in a minute now.
Yeah. Other people go feral, she goes domestic. Right. You've got a little bit of news of your own. Let's do that first.
It isn't that I'm going to Copenhagen tomorrow, is it? It is that I'm going to be presenting my own show every Saturday here on Times Radio from March 21st.
Brilliant.
1 till 4. News, politics, current affairs, a little bit of showbiz. Big guests, clever colleagues, all the things you get from Times Radio throughout the week. I basically model myself on YouTube, but there's only one of me, and I'm on a Saturday.
Okay, don't do that. we're at the end of the line, love. You're definitely still pulling out the station. What is the kind of tone? Because we asked Ryan Tubridy this yesterday, because he is doing the Sunday afternoon show, which is quite a difficult time, Sunday afternoon. You don't know whether you want to keep people perky, 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 let them sleep on the sofa. Saturday afternoon?
Well, so when I sat in for Adam Bolton on his Sunday morning show last summer, the tagline that our advertising department came up with was liven up your lazy Sunday. And I'd say that's sort of a similar sort of tagline in my head for Saturday afternoon. Turn the rugby off, listen to me, and yeah, joy, energy, probably a little bit of chaos, but energetic, bouncy, you know, informed and thoughtful, as Times Radio always is. But we want it to feel like an injection of the weekend output from the Times into your ears. So, you know, quite a lot of that, especially the bits I work on, you know, bit of energy.
Well, it sounds brilliant. Unswitch-offable. Now, let's talk about everyone. Let's talk about what's in the Saturday Times magazine, because I mean, this is just the story of what happens when you go to print, isn't it?
Absolutely.
The timings involved, because the front cover and the big story in the interview inside is with Peter Mandelson.
Yes, absolutely. So the cover line of our magazine, with a picture of Peter Mandelson in his kitchen with his dog, the cover line is, "I've had a lot of bad luck, now no doubt some of it of my own making." That cover line went to press at 4 p.m. last Friday. At 6 or 7 p.m. last Friday, 3 million new FC file documents dropped. And by 10 o'clock last Friday, you know, the front page of The Guardian was running the story that Peter Mandelson's husband had received tens of thousands of pounds from Jeffrey Epstein. Katie Balls, who is a phenomenal scoop getter and just an all-round incredible journalist, she'd done the first interview with Mandelson as US ambassador last summer. They ate crab cakes in Maryland, and it was a brilliant interview. They stayed in touch. She is, you know, she's so well connected and people love talking to her. So she had persuaded Peter Mandelson to do the first interview since being sacked as American ambassador. And they sat down at his house in Wiltshire a week last Sunday. So last week, Katie was writing this piece, filing it, apparently with Mandelson not even realising everything that was to come, which is one of the brain-boggling aspects of this story. But Katie filed the piece. Our front cover goes to press on a Friday afternoon. The rest of the magazine, all the inside pages, not to let light in on too much magic here, but the rest of it goes on a Monday afternoon. So then poor Katie had to spend the weekend rewriting her incredible interview, her world exclusive, multiple times as the story just kept changing. And she was still rewriting much of, you know, this interview on Monday morning last week.
I mean,
eventually you have to close the page. It had to go to the printers at 4 o'clock.
But it's so interesting, Jane, to read it knowing all of those timings.
Exactly, Fee. Yes,
because
absolutely.
Some of what Peter Mandelson says in this interview, we now know he would not be able to say without challenge now.
Absolutely.
I'm just going to read you one tiny piece. He says, "Hiding under a rock would be a disproportionate response to a handful of misguided historical emails, which I deeply regret sending. If it hadn't been for the emails, I'd still be in Washington. Emails sent all of those years ago didn't change the relationship I had with this monster." Well, I mean, it's more than a handful of emails, isn't it?
That's the tone of their exchanges as well, isn't
point.
It?
Yes, and he talks about having had a relationship like many other people had with Jeffrey Epstein. Now we know that it absolutely is not true. Mm. Talks about lapse in judgment, you know. I mean, he says he doesn't remember anything about the picture of him in his pants or about receiving the money. I mean, now he is, it's extraordinary. This, you know, this went to press on Monday. And now he stands accused of corruption. You know, he's left the House of Lords. He's facing possible police charges, maybe even jail. It is incredible how much a story can develop over the course of a week. And actually, I was talking to Hugo Rifkind about this a little bit earlier today. You know, now this story kind of stands as an artifact to where we were a week ago. But I actually think it, for everyone who did read it on Monday or Tuesday online, because we then put it online, this is the amazing thing about being, you know, print and digital, is we could put the story online on Monday evening so everyone could read it with what was happening then. But I actually still think it's very, very worth reading on Sunday because of, as you say, Fee, you know, the sort of the obfuscation that was going on even on Monday.
Oh, it's fascinating because you're looking through very focals, aren't you, when you read it and you can't quite find the sweet spot. But Peter, there isn't a sweet spot anymore.
And the remarkable, I don't know what you would call it, chutzpah of someone who wants to do a sit-down interview, knowing that all of this potentially is coming out. I mean, when the Epstein files are coming out in this, not even a slow drip, this kind of extraordinary steamroller of evidence, to want to try to justify your position in such a way, yeah. is brain boggling.
And just to look that relaxed in your high neck jumper on your recliner in your beautiful light filled sitting room
being
in Wiltshire.
Able to eat toast reclining in that way.
It's flabbergasting. There's so many other really, really good stories in the magazine this week. We don't have very much time, but do you want to just tell us about the story of happy divorcees?
Yeah, this is a brilliant story. There's a woman called Lisa Dawson, who is a successful interiors expert. She'd been married for 24 years, had two adult children, one still at high school. And she was planning for, you know, sort of rolling back work. She was in her mid-50s, was looking at buying a little place in Greece with her husband, spending more time in the sunshine together, as she puts it. And then one day he told her he wasn't happy, he hadn't been happy for ages, and that he was leaving. And what's really interesting is she describes the process of spending about 24 hours being very upset and then starting to feel very liberated.
Yeah, it was quite a quick turnaround.
Yeah,
for
I
her.
Know.
Quite quick.
For other people.
I think she's very decisive.
I'm all for positivity, but
China's a fast-paced world these days, but that's a very quick recovery, Jane.
It's more like a Hollywood scene, really, isn't it? And now, but she does write in this piece about when she posted on Instagram a few weeks later about what had happened. She got hundreds of messages from women who a similar thing had happened to, and sort of discussing being blindsided by it. And she does write about what she thinks happens to a lot of women, that they spend, you know, 25 years of their lives being caregivers, you know, working themselves, but also running the family, caring for everyone, while men, not all men, are mainly earning money and supporting the family. And then, you know, suddenly children leave home, women are in a different place, and she thinks that something does happen in that place. The happy ending to it all is that she is 54 and feels absolutely fantastic, and she isn't going to be able to buy the small place in Greece, but that she's in a very good place and looking forward to her future, albeit a very different looking future.
I just hope she gets to buy a big place in Greece. Just go for it. Yeah, I mean, I think she obviously is capable of owning the fact that financially she's been okay, because I think for so many women, apart from anything else, it's not just the emotional recovery, it's a financial vulnerability, you know, that maybe if it happens to you later on in life, you simply don't have time to make a decent recovery from. But it's a lovely, uplifting piece to read, and, you know, good for her. And also, she doesn't do the bitter thing. So she's just gone, he wasn't happy, I was, but it's okay. You know, let's just leave it at that.
Yeah, and I hope that he is a Times subscriber and gets to look at her doing incredibly well in the pages of the Times magazine.
What a good point. You'll make an excellent radio presenter. All the balance was there, Jane. When do you start it, if people are asking?
21st of March.
21st of March.
Saturday the 21st.
What?
At 1 till 4 p.m.
1 till 4. Spend the afternoon with La Mulkerins.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
3 o'clock and a very good afternoon to you. Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio until four. We're talking about autism in the next hour. It was always a thought, assumed possibly, that more men than women have autism. It isn't true, apparently, and we're going to be talking to the actress Kimberly Nixon, who's just received or has received as an adult a diagnosis of autism. We are going to discuss the male ski jumpers at the Winter Olympics who have, and I have to say the word allegedly, have allegedly been injecting their penises with hyaluronic acid to make them larger. We'll discuss why you might consider doing that with our sportsman Vassos Alexander. And our big guest after 3:30 is the television presenter Michaela Strachan, discussing her new tour, Not Just a Wild Life. Here's Stuart Willie with the news.
Jane, thank you. Good afternoon. The Prime Minister is insisting he'll carry on, despite mounting pressure on his leadership over the Mandelson affair. Sir Keir Starmer apologised to victims of Jeffrey Epstein, saying he's sorry for believing what he called Mandelson's lies, and appointing him ambassador to the US. Opposition parties are calling for a vote of confidence in Starmer. Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch says he'll have to be dragged out of number 10.
He is backtracking now because he's a coward. The fact is, he saw security vetting that had information that every single person in this room would have realised made Mandelson unsuitable. And he still went ahead and appointed him because he thought he was being clever. He should be apologising for ignoring the security advice rather than apologising for believing Mandelson.
They've not called on disgruntled Labour MPs to do the right thing and contact Conservative whips. James Lyons is a former director of communications to Starmer. He spoke with Times Radio.
I don't think anyone could overstate the gravity of the situation the Prime Minister finds himself in. The messages I've been getting on my phone over the last 24, 48 hours from former colleagues are frankly unrepeatable. Although there's one small glimmer of light for him here, in that I don't think anything could be more designed to make Labour MPs come to the Prime Minister's defence than the words that we've just heard from Kemi Badenoch there.
In other news, plans to restore Parliament could cost up to £40 billion. Two options have been put forward, one for a full decant, where both the Commons and the Lords would move out of the Palace of Westminster while the work takes place, the other to do it in stages, something that could last six decades. A Russian sea captain has been jailed for 6 years over a collision in the North Sea in which a crew member died. Vladimir Motin, who's 59, had been on watch duty when the Solong crashed into the Stena Immaculate in March last year. He was found guilty of manslaughter by gross negligence after Mark Pernia died in the fire that broke out in the wreckage. Mr. Justice Andrew Baker handed down the sentence at the Old Bailey.
You were knowingly flouting SOLAS by routinely operating without any bridge navigational watch alarm system. You were a serious accident waiting to happen.
One person has died and three others have been taken to hospital after a bus crashed into pedestrians in Dublin city centre. Ireland's Justice Minister has confirmed three people have been taken to hospital. Road closures and diversions are in place as an investigation gets underway. Health officials are warning tourists travelling to Cape Verde to take hygiene precautions after outbreaks of stomach bugs at resorts. Several British people are known to have died after contracting infections there. And it's confirmed Scotland will have an extra bank holiday this year to mark the nation's return to the top of world football. It'll be on June the 15th, the day after their first game at a World Cup since 1998. Remember, the finest writers from The Times preview and review the week's football on The Game podcast.
Across the UK, on DAB digital radio, on the Times Radio app, online, and on your smart speaker. Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wickes Kitchens and Bathrooms.
Now, the conventional wisdom on autism is that substantially more men have the neurodivergent condition than women. Estimates range from one woman to every three or four men. But a new study that followed 2.7 million people has turned that on its head. Researchers in Sweden tracked every autism diagnosis in the country over 15 years. And they concluded that by the time people reach adulthood, the ratio is roughly equal. Let's talk to Professor Gina Rippon, who is a neurobiologist and the author of The Lost Girls of Autism, The Untold Story of Women on the Spectrum. Professor Rippon, a very good afternoon. Can you just explain why it was the perceived wisdom that women didn't have autism as much as men? Why did that go on for so long?
I think it comes into the realms of self-fulfilling prophecies. In the very early days, it wasn't particularly identified as being characteristic of males rather than females. But as cases accumulated, that statistic started to emerge that it was much more common in males than females. And that became sort of entrenched in everything from diagnostic practice to public consciousness to research programmes, myself included. And I think the issue was that we didn't see autistic women because we weren't looking for them, because there wasn't clear picture of what an autistic person looked like. But now we look at it more carefully, it's clear that actually it's an autistic boy, autistic male that we've been looking at. So females were being compared to see if they presented in the same way, and they didn't. So they effectively even failed, in inverted commas, the diagnostic tests, because they didn't look like the kind of autism that people were looking for.
Sure. So can you explain that a little bit more? How was it accepted that autism was manifesting itself in boys?
Well, I think the early presentations were much more in the more severe end of the spectrum. And characteristically, boys were much more likely to act out their symptoms. So they were perhaps more disruptive in class, or they showed the sort of characteristic behaviour patterns of rocking and headbanging and etc. Whereas the girls there were some girls that did get diagnosed with autism and they were more like the boys. But there were lots of girls who actually were very, very quiet, didn't interact with other people very much, but didn't disrupt in key issues the kind of classroom the classroom atmosphere. So they weren't really noticed. And I think that was the point early on. It was kind of intersected with what we might call gendered socialisation, girls being told to keep quiet, not make a fuss, not draw attention to yourself.
Right. And this is very definitive research, isn't it, that's come out of Sweden? I mean, it's 2.7 million people over 15 years.
Yeah, absolutely an amazing, perhaps stereotyping, typical Scandinavian study. It's great because, first of all, they relied on clinical diagnosis. So it kind of counteracts the arguments that we've got nowadays about people self-identifying and jumping on celebrity bandwagons, etc. So it's a very clearly well-defined cohort, huge, as you say. And because of the Scandinavian system, the Swedish system, lots and lots of information on all of these children and adults from a very early age. So it's a very sound database. And also the key thing is they were looking at when people were diagnosed with autism, because a lot of the time people are just counting the number of autistic individuals and don't pay any attention to when they were diagnosed. And then they realised that over time what was happening, that boys were getting identified earlier, but as you looked at older cohorts, you could see that actually girls, there was a kind of catch up, a recognition of girls. So that by the time, I think the data talk about the late 20s, you know, there was virtually the male-female ratio was pretty much equal.
And can you explain, and I know this is difficult, Professor, because every case is different, but can you explain the damage that a later in life diagnosis might have, i.e. the treatment that you could have been having before?
Oh, yes. I mean, that's very well documented, not least by late diagnosed autistic women themselves who, you know, in their even in their 30s, 40s, you know, so after the cohort the Scandinavian study was looking at were diagnosed with autism, were saying, you know, how much difference it made having had that diagnosis because they had suffered with all sorts of mental health problems throughout their lives from quite a young age. But they, you know, they were never referred for an autism diagnosis. They had all sorts of other diagnoses. They talk about diagnostic bingo, etc. So they were given the wrong treatment. They may have been given the wrong medication. The kind of support that worked well with the kind of patterns of behaviour characteristic of autism, you know, weren't available to them. And so late on in life, they realised that their lives could have been very different if they'd been recognised earlier on.
What happens now with this new information, Professor Rippon? Because you can imagine that it might embolden people to seek a diagnosis earlier. But as we hear with so many conditions, our NHS service is struggling to cope. So is there, do you think, a kind of a troubled time coming across the horizon, even though in the long run, this is a very valid and worthwhile study?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the issues was, are we looking at increases in rates of autism diagnosis? And that's a key issue. We're not necessarily looking at increasing cases, that just that we're better at recognising them. People are saying, you know, is this all due to the fact that people are now realising that there's a large population of autistic individuals, most of whom are female, who haven't been recognised, who are now seeking diagnosis? And, you know, I think at some level you say, well, you know, these people need help.
Sure.
You know,
but if the help's not there, I mean, I'm not for one moment suggesting that they just have to kind of lump it or whatever. But you can see why the cart and the horse might not be in the right kind of connective place at the moment.
Yes, I think the key thing to remember is for a lot of people, it is just the getting a diagnosis, which is really helpful.
Yeah,
they have a better identity, better, clearer idea of why they've had the problems they have. They can identify to other people, their work colleagues or their families, you know, the difficulties they've had, which they've been hiding, you know, and at last they can say, you know, this is why you may have found my behaviour unusual, and this is why. So I think it's not necessarily they're going to need huge amounts of intervention or suddenly be signed up onto intervention programmes that aren't available. And we know that, looking at the waiting times for autism diagnosis anyway. But I think it's important that they receive at least recognition.
Yeah. Thank you very much indeed for explaining that. That's Professor Gina Rippon. If you want to know more, she is the author of The Lost Girls of Autism, The Untold Story of Women on the Spectrum. We can talk now to Kimberly Nixon, an actress known for shows like Fresh Meat and the upcoming Under Salt Marsh. She was diagnosed with autism as an adult and joins us now too. Kimberly, a very good afternoon.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, absolutely our pleasure. What brought about your diagnosis?
Well, it was really off the back of having, I had my son after IVF right slap bang in the middle of the pandemic, and had a fairly brutal couple of years postnatally with postnatal OCD, and so off the back of that, looking into things, and then years later, finally getting the autism diagnosis, which just made everything make sense, basically.
Tell us a bit more about which bits made sense.
Just the idea that I always knew that I was, that the way I thought maybe was different. I always knew that I should hide and slightly mask that and try and fit in with everybody else. Things like, I think there's a real, a reason it wasn't caught with me is possibly there was a slight overlap with me wanting to be an actor, in that I would be fascinated watching actors' expressions in films. I would watch them over and over again to try and understand what they were trying to convey. I would practice facial expressions and eye contact in the mirror. I would just try to replicate what other girls around me were doing, so that I was seen as polite, no trouble, pretty much to be a good girl, basically.
Sure.
Yeah. Not.
And it was fascinating to hear what Professor Rippon was saying about kind of back in the old days. I mean, they're not too olden days, actually, are they? The stereotypical image of what an autistic person was based on what an autistic boy was, and that was a stereotype, heavily dominated by maybe tics or difficult physical movements, or maybe in some cases aggression. So did you think, well, that's not me, so I can't possibly be on the spectrum?
Exactly. So I'm an ambassador for the National Autistic Society, and I have been one for over 10 years. I only got my autism diagnosis a few months ago. I had no idea that it had anything to do with me in that way. I initially became an ambassador because my niece is autistic, and we wanted to help and learn more about it. She got diagnosed very early on, about 2 or 3 years old, and I think that's because she displayed more in those, if you'll say that boyish outward way. A lot of women I speak to now who have a late diagnosis, it's all very inward. It's all almost invisible. Mental checking and tics that we're doing. So we're not giving mental health professionals we're just not giving them the observations that they want to see.
Yes. Do you know what difference it would have made to you to have that early diagnosis? I mean, it's so difficult, isn't it, to look back over your childhood and earlier years and say, well, I would have done that differently if I'd known. Can you do that at all?
Possibly. I don't know. I'm never sure how useful that is. I mean, it's made things. I am where I am now because of how my life panned out, and I'm not sure I'd want to change that. But I definitely, growing up, not. There's a lot of overlap with OCD and autism, and I just had we just didn't have the words. I was born in the mid 80s, so growing up in the 90s, early 2000s in school, we just didn't have the words for emotionally dysregulated. And like, if you weren't causing a fuss in the classroom, you just slipped under the radar.
Yeah.
And I, you know, it just helps me to understand things like echolalia. So, you know, when I've always, my whole life, repeated phrases and bits of conversations or bits of a song over and over in my mind for weeks or months at a time. And just thinking, you know, am I a bit mad? Did I not tell anyone that? And then understanding that it's a really common symptom.
Yep. So you must love the Swedes for this study. So the study in Sweden followed 2.7 million people for 15 years. And have you thought about leaving this country, going to live there instead? They seem to have got their head screwed on about this.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be too harsh and downbeat on where things are going. Things are better. Things are getting better. You know, we have a better understanding, a better language, a better knowledge of the idea of this spectrum. You know, my autism doesn't present in the same way that my nieces does. You know, but no two autistic people do. But there's definitely more compassion. I just feel that with women, especially, you know, around menstrual cycles, puberty, childbirth, that, you know, those things that affect women, there's just not enough research done into that,
sure,
into neurodivergent women.
And can I ask you about that compassion level, Kimberly? Because also there is a voice of skepticism and, in a way, sometimes derision that everybody, yes, now is saying they're on the spectrum somewhere.
Yes.
Everybody thinks that they're a little bit different. And I wonder how you cope with that.
It can be tricky sometimes, you know, especially as I tend to process things slightly differently. So I will definitely overanalyze that if somebody says something like that to me. I like to go back to the saying that there was a quote by somebody that Pluto wasn't discovered until 1930, but, you know, we're pretty sure it was there the whole time. You know, there aren't more stars in the sky because we developed telescopes. It's our understanding is better, and so we're able to diagnose people. But no, not everybody is a little bit autistic. Right. And no, you're not a little bit OCD if you enjoy lining up books and color coding things. You know, it's they're really hard, really difficult disorders to live with, really difficult. And I know that I'm lucky in how mine manifests to a certain degree, which is why I like to speak for people or try to amplify people's voices who can't. But usually it's met with compassion, but there is a definite eye roll, I would say.
Sure. That's such a good saying about Pluto. Very, very good indeed. How lovely to talk to you, Kimberly. Thank you very much indeed for joining us this afternoon.
Kimberly Nixon is
an actress, and she is in the upcoming, I think it's available already, isn't it, Saltmarsh?
Very good, I'm told. Very good indeed. Yes, lovely to hear her perspective this afternoon. Phil's a bit upset. He says, very disappointed that my pause for sport idea appears to have been passed over. Perhaps considering what you're about to discuss, you ought to have gone for talking balls. Well, I wanted that, but it was pointed out to me that we wouldn't always be discussing spherical objects in this segment. Yeah.
Can I just say that you, Jane Garvey, are a consummate professional.
Thank you.
Because you managed to get through what we like to call the 3 o'clock tease, which had a very difficult sentence that, if you were sight reading, really did take some welly to get through it. And so the laugh that you heard at the end, it wasn't my very professional colleague, it was me.
Yes.
And it was because I knew that you'd done very well to get through that headline and nothing else. There's nothing funny about this story. It sounds incredibly painful.
Well, we're going to hear more about it in a moment. Annie says, I don't normally get to hear your show because I'm at work during the day, but I'm off sick. Poor old Annie's got she's had an infected tooth extracted just yesterday. Oh, I hope you're feeling better. I was actually feeling a bit miserable and sad, but your show has cheered me up. Right. OK. Well, Annie, welcome. I'm sorry you can't get to hear us normally, but of course you can listen back on the Times Radio.
app. And there's really no excuse. I mean, when you get in from work about 6:30, 7 o'clock, just simply relive the current affairs of the afternoon. Why not? It's all there. You can just go back, can't you? You can do it, can't you?
Yes, you can.
Yes, yeah. Make more of an effort, Annie, when your tooth's sorted out. Right, we've got a great guest, Michaela Strachan, talking to us after 3:30. And next, yes, we are going to the world, the wacky world of sport in the company of Vassos Alexander. It is 3:21.
The State of It, USA is the new podcast from The Times and The Sunday Times that brings you real truth about US politics and power. Join political heavyweights Katie Balls and Gerard Baker as they take a deep dive into the latest wrangles in the White House and bring you intelligent analysis and insight. No fake news, no flag waving, and no Trump derangement syndrome.
Fascinating week in Trumpland, MAGA-land, what used to be called the United States of America.
Just the inside track on the decisions that are shaping America. The State of It USA is available now on the Times Radio app or from your preferred podcast provider.
It turns out you can please all of the people, all of the time. Garden games for the kids, a separate cottage for the grandparents, a private chef for that special occasion. Simpson Travel, idyllic Mediterranean holidays that everyone will love. We take care of the details so you can enjoy the moment. SimpsonTravel.com, because your time is precious.
This Valentine's Day, show them what they mean to you with an imaginatively crafted gift from Hotel Chocolat. For the one who always saves you the last chocolate, explore boxes bursting with desserts and cocktails transformed by chocolatiers. Or perhaps our barista-grade drinking chocolate system, the all-new Velvetizer. From grand gestures to thoughtful tokens, find the gift you know they'll love in-store or online at Hotel Chocolat.
When you switch the family's unlimited plans to Vodafone, you save. So while Nan's learning to voice note,
can you hear this? Is this on?
You're saving. While your daughter's setting a new high score on her favourite game.
Get in!
You're saving. While your son's video calling his crush for 3 hours.
I love you more.
You're saving. Save more when you switch your family's plans to Vodafone. With Vodafone together. Eligible plans from the 30th of October. Credit check and terms apply.
Listen to Times Radio on your smart speaker. Just say, play Times Radio.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix. The kitchen and bathroom sale is now on. Let the design and installation experts at Wix help transform your home. Get started by booking a free kitchen or bathroom design appointment at wix.co.uk.
Yep, it's Jane and Fee on Times Radio with Wix. The kitchen and bathroom sale's now on. Explore all the sale offers at wix.co.uk or visit your local Wix store. And of course, it's Thursday, so it's Proud as a Peacock Day. And we've had actually some really lovely nominations.
Very lovely one from Colin, who says, I'm nominating my wife not just for the challenges she's overcome, but for the grace with which she has carried them out. For years, she's battled ulcerative colitis. Now, that's a horrendous illness. Colin says she's endured two major life-altering operations, facing each recovery with a level of courage that honestly leaves me in awe. And she has also been looking after their young son, Jake, during all of this time. She's even played with Jake, who's only 4, whilst in pain, just to make him smile and be happy. You go into the pot, Colin.
What a brilliant woman she sounds. And Daisy says, I'd like to nominate my dad, Ramon, for his work with us. I want him to get the Proud as a Peacock Award. Me and my fiancé brought our first home in September. My dad has done so much for us throughout the whole process. He helped us with the process of buying, getting the survey and moving in. And then he's done the garden. He has completely stripped the overgrown weeds and bushes. He's planted all new bulbs. He even made a map of which bulbs he'd planted and where. I mean, my goodness. He's helped with everything else DIY related. He's installed our Ring doorbell. He's done drilling and he's stripped wallpaper. The man has done it all and he has never complained once. Goodness me. Well, he well deserves a spot in the pot as well, with the chance of winning a Wix £250 voucher. Now, get a wiggle on. There is still a bit of time to squeeze in before 4 o'clock, isn't there?
There is. 0333 003 2353, or you can email Jane and Fee at times.radio. And don't forget that you can also pop along to your Wix store if you want to make the most of the Wix sale, which is now on. You can also go to wix.co.uk.
Yeah, right. I have to say, if you don't know that sale is now on, I mean, you know, where have you been? Come on. Right, let's bring in Vassos Alexander. We talk sport every Monday to Thursday at around this time. We thought we'd reach peak Winter Olympics. Turned out we were nowhere near it. This is such a good story from Matt Lawton on thetimes.com. Have a look now. Anti-doping chiefs have said they're going to look into claims that Olympic ski jumpers have injected acid into their penises to gain an unfair advantage. Athletes are having the crotch of their bodysuits microchipped in an effort to cut down on, it has to be said, this quite innovative form of cheating. Right, Vassos, why might this help you?
So, it all boils down to the fact that the surface area of a ski suit, which are strictly regulated, they impact stability and buoyancy in the air. So the dimensions of each jumper's suit are partly determined by a measurement of their stride length, which is taken by a 3D scanner from the lowest point of their genital area. If you increase that by 2 centimetres and you are a ski jumper, that can equate to 6 metres, almost 6 metres, a longer jump.
Really?
Yes, because it stops downforce. It helps you. Basically, you're just jumping and gliding if you are a ski jumper. And so,
there's nothing to it, really, is there? I don't know why I don't give it a whirl.
It is one of the most astonishing sights in world sports, sitting at the top of a ski jump, the big hill, the 110-metre hill, just looking down. What they're basically just throwing themselves into nothingness. It is an astonishing thing. Mm. But obviously, this being the Olympics, the lovely thing about the Olympic Games, right, especially in sports like ski jumping, is that nobody really pays attention to them for 3.5 years out of 4. And then suddenly for 2 weeks, they're the superstars. They have the world's focus on them. And what happens in the next 10 seconds impacts the rest of their lives.
Yeah,
you know, nobody really knows who won the biathlon world championship or the ski jump world championship last year, but everyone knows who wins the Olympics, and that's when the eyes of the world are on you. So it matters so much that they start cheating in this way.
Okay, so does it hurt? That's what people with and without penises are just going to want to know what the answer to that question is.
With some trepidation outside, I googled hyaluronic acid injections, and it turns out they're quite common. They're a bit like Botox. People have it injected into their face to get rid of wrinkles and lines. People have it if they've got a dodgy knee. You can get an acid injection in your knee, and apparently that helps. I drew the line at adding the word penis to my internet search, but apparently it does not hurt. It feels a bit weird when the gel goes in, but it doesn't hurt. A little bit of local anaesthetic and you're away you go.
And the microchipping will just stop them being able to do this, because they have to wear the ski suit they were allocated or given. I don't really get this.
So some Norwegians in Norway, by the way, they don't call it the Winter Olympics, they call it the Olympics, because this is all about this for them, and they call it the Summer Games, or the sort of the minor one for them. A couple of Norwegians were banned for doing, the coaches were banned, and the athletes for a short amount of time, because they were told they didn't know, for manipulating the suits in this way. This is a couple of years ago. So they have now microchipped. It feels a little bit like Formula One. You know how they say Formula One is basically orchestrated cheating. You're not cheating. You're bending the rules to the extent that, that actually, and then you're lauded as a genius for doing so. It feels a little bit like the British bobsleigh team. Currently, their helmets are against the rules, and so they're going to the Court of Arbitration for Sport today to try and say no, they are in the rules. So there's a lot of this stuff going on. It started, do you remember, with Ian Thorpe's bodysuit? He basically would swim and break world records in a wetsuit that it turned out was sort of gripping the water and helping propel him through the water, and then that was banned. Nike's new the super shoe that actually the IAAF have said it's fine. It's millimetres, millimetres, millimetres. The cyclist who was banned last year because her bike had an engine in it, in its actual frame.
That's not tweaking. That's outrageous. good idea, though. oh, Vassos, we've so enjoyed having you on the programme this week, and there'll be more next week when we'll no doubt be, well, we'll have ratcheted up any number of gold medals for Team GB, won't we, by then? Of course we will. Let's be optimistic.
I think you're very right to be wary about your Google searches as well, and we were a little bit trepidatious. And this whole conversation seems to need to be vetted by HR now. We hope we come out of it all right.
Just worth saying that this story sort of emerged in a press conference in Italy ahead of the Winter Olympics, hosted by the president of the World Anti-Doping Agency, who is called Witold Banker. To make that absolutely clear.
I'm going to try and follow that. Right. Coming up, we're going wild with wildlife presenter Michaela Strachan. That's going to check on the latest news headlines first with Stuart Willey.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio.
Fee, thank you. Good afternoon. The Prime Minister is seeking to weather the storm surrounding Peter Mandelson's appointment as US ambassador. Sir Keir Starmer's apologised to victims of Jeffrey Epstein, saying he's sorry for having believed the lies of the paedophile's friend to secure the job. He insisted that no one in government knew of what he called the depth of the darkness of their relationship. Times Radio's political editor Anna Mikhailova was at the Prime Minister's press conference. She says his MPs are still unhappy.
His message to Labour MPs specifically was that he shares their frustration. But with political scandals, you know, we've seen this in the past. It all just depends on how long it continues for. How many more days are we going to get of people talking about Mandelson and Epstein? The Prime Minister was already in a weak position going into this scandal.
A man who stabbed a 9-year-old girl in the heart while she played hula hoop in the street has been convicted of murder. Lilia Valutite was attacked outside her mother's embroidery shop at Boston in Lincolnshire in July 2022. More than 100 jobs are going at fashion retailer Quiz. Administrators have been called in as the firm closes its head office in Glasgow and warehouse in Lanarkshire. And a Minecraft movie was last year's highest-grossing film at the UK and Irish box office. It took in nearly £57 million. For a roundup of the news on demand, subscribe to the Times Radio News Briefing on any podcast platform.
This is Times Radio.
Summer is calling. Book early for your trip to Turkey and get the most out of your holiday. Visit GoTurkey.com now and discover unforgettable experiences. Plan your summer getaway to Turkey today.
Discover the world of Dobble, back in McDonald's Happy Meal. Race through the worlds of music, sports, space and more. How quickly can your little one spot the match? Dobble's bursting with fun. Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 5th of March 2026, from 11 a.m, includes one pre-selected book or toy. Dobble range comprises toys only, while stocks last.
It's easy to forget just how crazy things have been over the past couple of years. Every day we wake up to something new. Tariffs and taxes on anything and everything. It's tempting to put your hands in your ears and go, la 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 la, I can't hear you, until it's all over. But you know what's the best response to crazy times? A plan for your money. And Quilter can help. Because let's face it, there's probably going to be some crazy times ahead too. Money needs a plan. Quilter. Pensions, investments, advice. Find out more at quilter.com.
The day's big stories and tomorrow's front pages. Saturday and Sunday nights from 10 with Daryl Morris.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix. Are you dreaming of a new kitchen? Let Wix guide you through the wide range of stunning styles, appliances and worktops. Kitchens start from under £3,000. Get started by booking your free design appointment at wix.co.uk.
25 minutes to four. Owls, elephants, sharks, Pete Waterman. Michaela Strachan has documented them all across her career spanning 40 years now. She's made some spectacular turns along the way, replacing big beats of music. Her co-host on The Hitman and Her was the aforementioned Waterman. Michaela herself had two pop singles. She's an alumni of the Wide Awake Club. But it is the call of the wild that got to her. And we know her best now for her work on wildlife films and shows, notably Spring, Autumn and Winter Watch.
much. She's gone to ground, though. We can't quite get hold of her in the right hide at the moment. So we'll do a tiny bit of chatting. Jane has got news of vermin that are coming to this country.
Well, no, I've just been...
They're breaking through our borders and they're not welcome. What are they? The gliss-gliss?
I think that's how you pronounce them. I was hoping to ping a question to Michaela about these critters. The Sun has rather breathlessly reported this week that these creatures have been terrorising areas of Britain, with an estimated 30,000 roaming Bedfordshire, Buckinghamshire and Berkshire. So they favour counties beginning with a B, and as The Sun points out, they might look cute, but they're anything but, and some people have said they're absolutely monstrous. They do look similar to dormice. They're sort of grey, furry, and they've got a bushy tail. They actually also go by the name edible dormice. Several of them were first brought over to Britain from Italy by the noted zoologist, actually, Lionel Walter Rothschild. And they were added to the family's natural collection of animals at Tring Park in Hertfordshire. But then, six of them, they escaped. And you know what they did when they escaped?
Well, they probably had fun.
Yeah, they went on to breed.
They did, didn't they? They went al fresco.
Yeah, and it's just, they're annoying. They are really annoying, and I wonder if Michaela has a line on the gliss-gliss, but we can find out.
Well, hopefully we have managed to make the connection which would make that question possible. Have we managed that? No, yes? Oh, we got it. Hello. Hello, Michaela.
Hello.
Hello. Oh, thank goodness you're there. Jane has just done some very, very stalwart filling over the last couple of minutes.
It wasn't very good.
No, it was fascinating.
I could hear it. Yeah. No, I found it interesting. I could hear it because I think they were having trouble because I was sounding like I was really in a hide. I mean, I'm not. I'm in an office, but it was sounding very echoey. So okay. I'm now on the telephone talking to you, but you can see me on the Zoom.
Okay. Wonderful. Well, we've made the connection and that's all that matters. And it is quite ironic, isn't it? Because you are... one of our guests who we could call and you would be somewhere far, far flung in the world. But yeah, you're in a cupboard now.
Now, in a cupboard.
You've just come out of doing Winter Watch. These are glorious programmes that you do, aren't they? They are telling us stuff about our natural world, all of the lovely creatures we walk past or drive past. The big question is always Spring Watch, Autumn Watch, Winter Watch, why no Summer Watch?
Well, we don't even have Autumn Watch anymore now. So we've got Spring Watch and Winter Watch. Summer Watch, do you know, spring is always late. People always say to us with Spring Watch, why is it so late? It feels like it's summer already. It's all to do with the other outside broadcasts that are on. So you've got the Chelsea Flower Show, and we have to come after the Chelsea Flower Show because they use all the outside broadcast vehicles. That's one of the reasons. But the other reason is, obviously on Spring Watch, we follow the stories of birds in nests. You want to see the birds fledge. You don't want to be watching eggs. So if you were earlier, you'd just be watching, you know, eggs that don't move. So that's another reason why Spring Watch is quite late. So Spring Watch sort of bleeds into summer a little bit. So Summer Watch would just be a few weeks later. So not much point in doing a Summer Watch, although it would be good.
Yeah,
I think we should definitely campaign to get Autumn Watch back and Summer Watch as a new thing. So
yes, well,
you start that campaign.
That campaign for just more Michaela Strachan. Commentating.
Not more me, more British wildlife.
On wildlife. And what should we look out for in winter in this country that can, you know, really connect us to our natural world?
Oh, I think at this time of the year, you know, I was walking for the train just yesterday and it was early morning. I was getting an early train and it's just the sound of the birds, isn't it? I mean, I think it lets you know that spring is on its way because you get that dawn chorus and it's just so glorious to listen to it. I think if anybody wanted to really immerse themselves in wildlife at this time of the year, get up early, you know, put some warm clothes on. There are all sorts of dawn chorus walks you can go on. So go on that, go with the experts, listen to the birds and just, you know, as I say, wrap yourself up warm, put some waterproofs on, and that would be my recommendation. Or go and find a starling murmuration. You know, look up where you can see a starling murmuration, because that, if you've never seen one before, then that's what I would say should be top of your list to tick off before the end of this winter.
Where do you think our national relationship with nature is at the moment?
Oh, that's a tricky one, isn't it? Because I think there are a lot of people that are very connected to wildlife. And the great thing is with algorithms on your social media these days, if you've looked at stuff that is anything about conservation and sustainability and wildlife, then you'll get more and more of it on your social media. So anyone that's interested ends up being pretty well educated, actually. So I think that there's a lot of people that are very connected, and then there's a lot of people that are totally and utterly disconnected, couldn't care less about nature and wildlife, you know, probably have never been on a walk in the countryside, have never picked up a pair of binoculars, have never even taken notice of any of the birds. So I think it's that audience that it would be great to reconnect with, because I think as a child, you're always interested in wildlife. It fascinates children. And then somewhere along the line, particularly with social media and with screens these days, that connection goes and you become disconnected. And I think that's why so many people are struggling. You know, so there's so much mental health issues because, you know, we're disconnected from what we should naturally be connected to, which is wildlife in the natural world.
Sure. I mean, there is a political tone at the moment as well, Michaela, isn't there, that says nature stands in the way of progress?
I mean, just makes me sigh. It makes me want to put my head in my hands, but I'm holding a phone, so I can't do that right now. So, I mean, that is incredibly sad, isn't it, that is what people are thinking. And, you know, what's the point of progress if we haven't got a natural world to progress in? You know, what's the point of progress if we have no clean air to breathe? What's the point of progress if we don't have water to drink? You know, it's basic stuff. You have to have the natural world for humans to be able to survive and to thrive. You know, we're going to be in a very, very miserable world if we don't look after our natural resources, if we don't have clean water, if we don't have clean air, you know, if we're so polluted that we have to wear masks or you know, have to pay for the air we breathe because it's so polluted we can't breathe it anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, these are realities. It may sound dystopian, but it's realities. So I think if politicians really thought about that, then, you know, it would become top of the agenda.
And we shouldn't get too caught up on Swift bricks. That was a recent one, wasn't it? People thought that it would be slowing down the building of new houses if this policy of putting a Swift brick in every house were to be adhered to. But my understanding of the Swift brick is it's literally a brick that has some holes in it so the Swift can go in. It's not complicated, that one, is it?
It's not complicated. And I think that's the thing. Everybody has an agenda, don't they? And I think if people stood back and just looked at why they're fighting for that agenda, they'd realise how ludicrous it was. I call it the absurdity of humanity. And there's so much of what we do and so many things that people argue and fight about that, as I say, if you took a step back and looked at it from a distance, you think that's absurd. That's utterly absurd that we're arguing about whether to put a brick in with a few holes in that might help a few swifts. I mean, why not? Why wouldn't you do that? It's helping swifts, it's helping swallows. Why wouldn't you do that? You know, it's not going to make any difference to anybody, except you've got to find a brick, you know, that does that for its purpose. So, yeah, I think people have agendas, and it would be good to realise that you're arguing it because it's your agenda rather than looking at the bigger picture and realising that actually it's a simple solution to a problem.
When is the moment when you have been most overawed by nature?
Do you know, I think when I went to the Antarctic, I was very lucky on the Really Wild Show many, many years ago to do an expedition to the Antarctic. And what I absolutely love about the Antarctic is that nobody owns it. You know, I mean, what other piece of land does nobody actually own? And there's no government for Antarctica. You know, I just think it's an incredible place. No one's from Antarctica. Who can put on their passport, where are you from, Antarctica? I mean, I stand to be corrected, but I don't know if any babies were actually born on the Antarctic continent. So I presume there's nobody from Antarctica. Maybe there's one or two, who knows? So let your listeners phone in and correct me on that one. But and it's just a stunning wilderness, and there's very, very few real wildernesses left. And I think Antarctica is one of them. And it's just spectacular. Obviously, it's changing dramatically, but when I went, it was just a spectacular place to be with fantastic wildlife.
And what is the most extraordinary creature that you've been in the presence of?
Oh, that's ever such a hard one without thinking of it. I'm a big shark fan. So I actually think the smallest stuff, the tiny little creatures that we know very little about, are usually the more fascinating. But I think if we're talking about experiences, that, you know, the most incredible, awesome experience I've had, it's probably being with sharks. I have a huge amount of respect for sharks. Obviously, a lot of people fear them. I don't have a fear of sharks. I have a respect, and that's a very different way of looking at it. You know, I know that sharks have sharp teeth, and if you get in the wrong place, then there could be an accident there. So I've dived many times with sharks, and I've done the cage diving. People have very different opinions about whether that's a good thing to do or a bad thing to do, but I did it many years ago. And to be in a cage and be able to view a shark, a white shark, in the ocean doing its thing and being a top predator, and it's evolved over millions of years to be that killing machine, was really an incredible thing to do.
Okay, rather you than me on that one.
Come on, it's no. On your bucket list.
No,
isn't it?
Okay, no, that's what you're there for. We always like to anthropomorphise our animals, don't we? And I think it's a really, really British thing to do as well. But shall we have a go at animalising you, if it's possible to turn the tables? So if I were to think, Michaela Strachan, what kind of animal is she? I would say that you are a very inquisitive meerkat, popping up above a sand dune, sniffing the breeze. Would that be about right?
I like that a lot. I actually love meerkats. And you're right. It's sort of pop your head out, have a little look around, scurry around a bit, because I've got quite a lot of energy, like a little meerkat.
You have, haven't you? I mean, I would say a boundless energy. You're also one of those extraordinary women who you just don't seem to be aging at all. We've got the pleasure of being able to see you. And I think actually we're available now on our YouTube channel, so anybody can see this. But you don't really look very different, Michaela. What are you on?
It's not hyaluronic acid, is it?
What does that say about the natural world? Get yourself out into the natural world and it does you the world of good. You know, the healing power of nature to me is a very real thing. And so I think I spend a lot of time outdoors. My happy place is hiking in the mountain, and I think it keeps you young, and to keep that, and also a positive attitude. Definitely that keeps you young. Negativity is definitely, you know, well, I was going to say negativity is a negative, but it is. Negativity doesn't do any of us any good. Fear doesn't do us any good. And I think the trouble is, with so much bad news around us, it can be very easy to slip into that negative, fearful mindset. And it's really important to keep that glass half full, if not full, which gets harder and harder as the years go by. But, you know, I work hard at it.
Yeah. There is stuff out there, as you've alluded to be fearful about and just to slightly be disappointed about as well. And I think one of those for me is the AI slop around nature, where I cannot tell anymore whether, you know, the cats who are doing funny things on Instagram have been created by teenagers or by bots, or whether they are actually doing magical things. And actually, it's kind of okay for me because I'm, you know, in my late 50s. But I think actually for young ones, if their first experience of watching animals is so distorted, they're just going to never really be able to come back from that. Would you agree?
I think anyone who is watching cats do stupid things on Instagram needs to have a little check of themselves.
What are you saying?
Goodness me, Michaela. What that's both saying, of us busted.
It's my go-to happy place. Cats drive cars. You know, I'll sit and watch it.
So I bet you've seen the one where the cat jumps up on the light, on the lampshade, and spins around.
Yes, I mean,
have. You know, what's
wrong with that?
Telling you. I mean, that is what's hilarious, isn't it? Algorithms make me laugh so much. Ever since I did Dancing on Ice, obviously I was watching ice skating during Dancing on Ice, and now that's all I get is ice skating videos. But you know what? I'd rather them cats, and I'd rather them lots of depressing news sometimes. But yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. Who knows where AI is taking us? And it is so difficult to know what's real. And, you know, I get sent a lot of things from Africa where suddenly, you know, the buffalo is throwing the lion up in the air and catching it in its teeth and doing a somersault. And you know, some people are going, wow, isn't that amazing? And you're going, oh my God, that's completely absurd. Of course that's AI. So, or you get a vulture that will suddenly be flying off with a zebra. You know, good God, people believe this stuff. But, you know, if it's less absurd, of course it's very difficult to know whether it's real or whether it's AI. So goodness knows how we're going to navigate the future with all that going on.
Caroline.
That's not for me to answer because I think you need to study that for many, many years and have a PhD in it to be able to actually come up with an answer to that question.
You seem eminently qualified to me. Don't worry about it. Caroline says, she's WhatsApp to say, I can't be the first person to let you know that 11 people have apparently been born on Antarctica. It does appear to be true, actually. Apparently, the first was a young man called Emilio Marcos Palmer, who was born back in 1978. The births, primarily in the 70s and 80s, were orchestrated, AI tells me, by Argentina and Chile to support territorial claims, with no births occurring on the continent for several decades.
That's really interesting. You know, yeah. I'm really glad that I made that mistake. I did wonder, actually, whether I would be corrected, and I'm glad I have been, because that's really interesting, isn't it?
Mm. Well, we're a two-way street here, very much, courtesy of our lovely listeners. Tell us a little bit about the stage show, what people can expect when they come and see you, because you are on tour, aren't you?
I'm going on tour. It starts on April the 13th, finishes on the 31st. It's called Not Just a Wild Life, because my life hasn't just been a wild life. And although wildlife has certainly dominated the latter half of my career, it's been an interesting journey to get to that place. And, you know, I started on Saturday morning children's magazine show called The Wide Awake Club. I then did a late night music show called The Hitman and Her. I mean, who would have thought that the presenter of that would end up presenting a flagship program on the BBC about British wildlife? So it's been an interesting sort of journey into where I am now, an interesting path. And so I decided to, I'm 60 in a 2 months time, and I've done 40 years in television. I thought, let's do a show that celebrates that 40 years and takes people on a real trip down memory lane. I mean, I've grown up and grown older on television, and I really hope that people will come and watch the show that have grown up and grown older with me, and will be able to reminisce and go down that memory lane with me, and look at old programs and talk about stuff that used to happen in the 80s and 90s, and then bring it up to date with the stuff that I'm doing these days on Springwatch and the sort of things I'm doing with wildlife. So yeah, it's taking people on a real journey through time in using the frame of my career, I guess.
So basically, come along and feel old with Michaela Strachan.
I can't believe you're nearly 60, by the way. Astonishing.
It is astonishing. Yeah, yeah, both Jane and I agree. Honestly, you look exactly the same as you did when I first came across you, which was on The Hitman and Her, and you're absolutely right. I wouldn't have predicted that we'd be talking about nature all of these years further down the line.
Know,
and as
bonkers,
for Pete Waterman, I mean, what happened to him? Michaela, it's absolutely lovely to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed for joining us this afternoon from your cupboard. Your telephone signal was really very good indeed, and the tour starts in April. Details available on a simple Google search.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, you are with Times Radio, and we find ourselves at approximately 7 minutes. It's nearly 4 o'clock.
Chloe Tilley and Callum McDonald on Times Radio Breakfast with Visit Scotland. Discover Times Radio's essential weekend briefing, where intelligent conversation meets incisive analysis of all the big stories making the headlines. Exploring the wider news agenda with guests from across politics, business, the arts and more. Chloe Tilley and Callum McDonald on Times Radio Breakfast. Saturday and Sunday mornings from 6 with Visit Scotland. Start your story in Scotland with visitscotland.com/winter.
Download the free Times Radio app from the App Store or Google Play today.
You plan a holiday, you plan a commute, meal plans, career plans, even workouts need a plan. So doesn't it stand to reason that your money has one too? Because the sad truth is, if it doesn't, it's just sitting there, barely growing, if at all. That's why you need a money plan. And Quilter can help. It's a lot easier to stick to than a workout plan. Money needs a plan. Quilter. Pensions, investments, advice. Find out more at quilter.com.
I believe those who are curious see the world differently. At Viking, we've always been curious and quite a bit different. For over 25 years, we've been connecting the thinking person with the world. First on the great rivers, then on all five oceans, now on all seven continents. We are One Viking, exploring the world in comfort.
The Wix Peacock Awards on Times Radio with Wix, the experts in kitchens and bathrooms. The Wix Kitchen and Bathroom Sale is on. Explore all the sale offers at wix.co.uk or visit the showroom in your local Wix store.
Yep, it's Jane and V on Times Radio with Wix. Book your free design appointment at wix.co.uk. We've had some cracking entries, haven't we?
We have. And do you know what? If Jane and I could give you all a prize, we absolutely would. The good news is that the competition carries on for a good few weeks to come. So why not enter again if you're not entirely the winner this week? A couple of other nominations before we announce who it is who's won. This one comes in from Joe. We moved to a tiny remote croft cottage in the Highlands just before lockdown. We needed more space, so my husband decided to demolish the tiny porch and build a 3 metre square extension. He tried to hire a digger to dig the foundations, but the supplier's only driver with the correct licence to deliver had left. So he got out his spade. He borrowed a cement mixer, built the whole thing, roofed it, leaded the seams. He was 72. What an amazing man.
You can say that again. Chris is in Devon. He describes himself as a proud dad, and he should be. He is, he says, proud as a peacock. My daughter Eleanor says Chris is 7 and autistic, completely non-verbal and with advanced needs. But I'm so proud of her. Eleanor has learned to play one potato, two potato. I mean, that is brilliant. Such a huge step. We are thrilled. Actually, says Chris, it doesn't begin to cover it. Well, congratulations to Eleanor, and I'm delighted you're so chuffed, Chris. That is great. And should we do one more? Linda, I'd like to nominate myself and my husband, Hamilton, for the Wix vouchers. Hamilton has a severe arthritic condition, and he's actually got less than 5% mobility in his neck. I'm able-bodied, but I'm only 5 foot tall. Yesterday, between us, I don't know how we were able to put up a blind, she says, and we didn't even argue that much. Hamilton has the height, I've got the mobility, so with a little bit of me to you, and some muttering under the collective breath, we managed to do it, and we still like each other. We are so proud of ourselves.
Well, so you should be. Today's award, though, is going to go to one that we have read out earlier. I'll read it again, though, in case you haven't been listening. What do you mean you haven't been listening since 4 minutes past two this afternoon? It came in from Paul. Hello, Jane and Fee. I'd like to nominate my daughter, Alexandra, who was 17 yesterday, passed her driving theory test that evening. COVID and cancer conspired to take her wonderful mother away from us in 2020. Since then, she's grown into a confident, intelligent, beautiful young woman, despite a sometimes hapless father being allegedly in charge. She'd like to refurbish a static caravan we use whilst renovating our house. This would be to hang out with her friends, and she also wants to have a go at holiday letting. It would be nice to encourage her entrepreneurship. Her mother would be so proud, as am I. So that is the award today. It goes to Paul for your daughter, Alexandra, and send us some pictures along the way of how the static caravan renovation goes. And congratulations to you, £250 better off.
Yeah, we'd love to see those images. Now, we'll be in touch to get your details. Congratulations again. Those Wix vouchers will be on their way to you soon. And if you'd like the chance to win next week, next Thursday, get that 250 Wix voucher in your home. Just think what you could do with it. Send us your proudest moment of the week on WhatsApp, or you can get an early email in, janeandfee@times.radio. We keep an eye on them. We don't lose any of the entries, and we do enjoy, actually thoroughly enjoy, reading them out on a Thursday. It just adds just a little bit of much needed positivity, because this week, I have to say, as the rain lashes down, it's just been relentless and dull, hasn't it? So please keep them coming. We love hearing from you.
The Wix Peacock Awards on Times Radio with Wix, the experts in kitchens and bathrooms. The Wix Kitchen and Bathroom Sale is on. Explore all the sale offers at wix.co.uk or visit the showroom in your local Wix store.
It just remains for Jane and I to say have a very lovely weekend when you get to it. Our producer today was Felix Forbes. Our technical operator was Adam Heaton. I think you'll agree we had both light and shade on offer. Up next, it's John Pina with Drive.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Thank you, Fee. Thank you, Jane. 4 o'clock, I'm John Pienaar, and this is Times Radio Drive. Here are the headlines. Sir Keir Starmer has apologised to Jeffrey Epstein's victims for appointing Peter Mandelson, and a cybersecurity student at De Montfort University who died after being stabbed in Leicester city centre has been named as Khalid Oladipo. And coming up, is Morgan McSweeney, and therefore the Prime Minister, on borrowed time? The Treasury Minister, Dan Tomlinson's going to join me, and a former Deputy Assistant Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police, Stephen Roberts, and whether publishing government's records of Mandelson's appointment could prejudice a police inquiry.
This is Times Radio.
And here's the news with Stuart Willie.
John, thank you. Good afternoon. As the Prime Minister apologises to victims of Jeffrey Epstein, the Conservative leader is calling him a coward who will need to be dragged out of Number 10. Kemi Badenoch wants disgruntled Labour MPs to join a vote of confidence in Sir Keir Starmer. He apologised for appointing Peter Mandelson as ambassador to Washington, but says no one knew of the depth and darkness of Mandelson's relationship with Epstein. He's told reporters he'll carry on.
I was elected in with this Labour government to bring about change for millions of people. That's what I intend to do. I regret making the decision to have appointed him in the first place. Had I known at the time what I know now or knew in September, I'd have never done it. And that's why today I've apologised for the fact that I appointed him in the first place and I believed his lies.
Sir Keir said he understands the frustration of Labour colleagues as pressure mounts on his leadership. The government is being forced to hand over information about the appointment to a parliamentary committee after a revolt by senior backbenchers. The Times' political editor Stephen Swinford says tens of thousands of messages are likely to be included.
You've got this now unexploded bomb. I am told there is a unit in the Cabinet Office that is desperately trying to scope out the scale of this challenge. They are now legally bound to give everything that Mandelson did, except on some narrow national security grounds and international relations ground. So it will be a treasure trove of information, the most intimate communications from Lord Mandelson to everyone in government.
In other news, the family of a university student fatally stabbed in Leicester have thanked emergency services and members of the public who tried to save him. Police say an 18-year-old man is being questioned over the death of Khalid Oladipo. The 20-year-old was a cybersecurity student at De Montfort University. The Duke of Marlborough is accused of controlling or coercive behaviour towards his wife, in addition to three charges of strangulation. 70-year-old Charles Spencer Churchill wasn't asked to enter a plea at Oxford Crown Court today, but earlier indicated he'll plead not guilty to the strangulation accusations. He's been granted conditional bail. A Russian cargo ship captain has been sentenced to 6 years in prison after the death of a crew member. Vladimir Motin was found guilty of gross negligence manslaughter over the collision with an oil tanker off the coast of Yorkshire last year. The judge called it an accident waiting to happen. Detective Chief Superintendent Craig Nicholson from Humberside Police spoke outside court.
Motin has shown no remorse at any stage of the investigation or the court proceedings. And even though he has now been sentenced and held accountable for his crimes, this will not bring Mark Pernia back. I sincerely hope today's outcome offers Mark's family some measure of solace, and my thoughts remain with them today.
Ukraine's president says 55,000 of his soldiers have been killed since Russia's invasion in 2022. The rare admission by Volodymyr Zelensky comes after 2 days of talks with Moscow and Washington in Abu Dhabi. Afterwards, the US envoy Steve Witkoff said significant work remains. And for a roundup of the news on demand, find the Times Radio news briefing on the Times Radio app.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the free Times Radio app, and via your smart speaker, John Pienaar at Drive on Times Radio.
Hello, I'm John Pienaar with Drive on Times Radio. Thanks for joining me. Well, Keir Starmer has finally said sorry, and that's something. The Prime Minister must have thought advised, presumably by the only man many hostile Labour MPs want to see sacked more than Starmer himself, that an apology might ease the almost unbearable pressure for change in Downing Street. It won't, though, will it? It's too late for that. And by the way, why is Morgan McSweeney, the Prime Minister's Chief of Staff, still in his job today?
today. We know Keir Starmer relies on his advice past the point of dependence. There's an old adage that when an advisor becomes the story, it's time to go. And McSweeney passed that point long ago. He is still there, still hasn't resigned. His mere presence is fanning the flames of mutiny among Labour MPs. I'm going to be talking to Labour MPs about that. The now audible collapse of faith in Keir Starmer is about much more than his disastrous decision to make Peter Mandelson ambassador, despite being told he was on friendly terms with the billionaire convicted paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Labour MPs heard the Prime Minister say again and again yesterday that Mandelson lied to him about the depth of that friendship, and they were horrified anyway. No, their doubts about the PM's leadership run deeper and go back further. Today, the Prime Minister is insisting he'd love to publish the record of Mandelson's answers to questions about his friendship with Epstein. He says they'd expose the extent of Mandelson's lies, but the police won't let him. The Met say they're concerned it might prejudice their investigation into Mandelson leaking inside info to Epstein. But could it? How could it? I'll be talking to an authority of legal and law enforcement voice about that. And here's a question getting more and more attention. Does the scandal raise important questions of national security? Was Jeffrey Epstein a Russian asset? And if he was, is it possible that Mandelson's serial leaking might have made him inadvertently a source of info and intelligence for the KGB? Well, I'm going to be talking to the former chair of the Joint Intelligence Committee, Dame Pauline Neville-Jones, about that. And I wonder what you think. Send me a text, 87222, start with the word Times, retweet to @TimesRadio. First, though, let's go back to Keir Starmer's apology to victims of Jeffrey Epstein for appointing Peter Mandelson as ambassador to Washington. Speaking in Sussex, the PM accused Mandelson of lying about the extent of that relationship.
Sorry that so many people with power failed you. Sorry for having believed Mandelson's lies and appointed him. In this country, we will not look away. We will not shrug our shoulders. And we will not allow the powerful to treat justice as optional.
Well, the PM said he intended to carry on despite growing anger among his Labour MPs. The Tory leader, Kemi Badenoch, called on Labour MPs to join in a no-confidence vote.
He is backtracking now because he's a coward. The fact is, he saw security vetting that had information that every single person in this room would have realised made Mandelson unsuitable. And he still went ahead and appointed him because he thought he was being clever. He should be apologising for ignoring the security advice rather than apologising for believing Mandelson.
So that's Kemi Badenoch. And Anna, welcome to the programme. Anna Mihailova, Times Radio's political editor. Hello, Anna.
Hi, John.
So, yes, there he was saying sorry, finally, but isn't it just too late and not much use?
I think if he'd given that speech yesterday in the Commons, he would have saved himself a very dramatic day in Parliament. This is the sort of passion and anger that MPs wanted him to display at Prime Minister's questions. And he sort of acknowledged that by saying at the beginning of his comments that, you know, he wanted to go back to what he couldn't or didn't say at PMQs. I mean, I was there in the room, John, and it was the most tense press conference I can remember. The air was just crackling with anticipation of what else was going to be asked and how was Keir Starmer going to respond to it. Every single question was about Peter Mandelson. He obviously rewrote his speech to be about Peter Mandelson at the beginning. And when one reporter stood up and just read out comments from Labour MPs, you could just, you know, I was watching Starmer. I was also watching Steve Reed, who was in the audience, and Steve Reed was shaking his head. I mean, there was this real tension and pressure on the Prime Minister.